tonight. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's regularly scheduled city council meeting. The meeting is called to order. I kindly ask our city clerk to take the roll call, but prior to doing so, we are going to have one of our aldermen, Mr. Sam Hill, join us by phone, which is allowed under Illinois statute. He's we're going to try that again.
I think that's a tape recorder that he just hits.
He's probably watching me dial.
How should we make Sam vote today?
We're going to have the city attorney try to get Sam on the phone.
Carolyn is here. Maybe she'd have better luck.
Mrs. Hill, where is this man you call Sam? What did you put in his dinner tonight?
Maybe the number's wrong by one digit or something.
No, I'm getting his voicemail.
Oh, voicemail. He's on the phone.
Folks, we're going to delay it for a second, but certainly we want to welcome Troop 37, who are with us this evening. And you're here for what purpose, gentlemen?
I'm Henry Feldhaus. We are here to get the communication.
Well, Henry, you've already failed. Come to the podium so I can hear you. And just so you know, you're on TV.
Okay.
Do you know where the cameras are?
Little guys.
Yeah, and right behind you as well. So use that microphone.
Okay.
And if you could, tell us how much your father made last year.
A lot.
Oh. Well, apparently we didn't love you enough. Wow.
That's
welcome,
why the,
Henry.
That's why
your name
here.
Again. My apologies.
Henry Feldhaus.
And Henry, you represent Troop 37?
Yes.
And I understand most of you guys are in middle school? Or is that incorrect?
I think one of us here is from high school.
Oh, no. Well, obviously that dude, my God. Either that or he lives under a power line. One of the two. That's all. What year are you in high school, sir?
Sophomore.
You know Ben and Pat Cascaden? Oh, you do? Cool, man. Welcome. First time at City Hall in Geneva? Have you? Awesome. Well, you guys are all middle schoolers.
Yes.
Northeast or Southeast?
I attend a private school, St. Peter's, and...
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah.
You know, I went there, too.
Yeah. And
your picture's up there.
Thanks for a dark setting.
Yeah, that was before the excommunication. It's a joke. We'll erase that from the tape.
Okay.
Where do you win? You're in sixth?
I'm in sixth.
How's it going so far?
Pretty good.
Yeah, you have a girlfriend?
No.
Well, here we go.
No? Bob, do you have a girlfriend?
No, not yet.
No? What can you tell us about your troop?
We have a fairly large troop.
Yeah.
And we just got a bunch of new scouts, so we're helping them along right now. And we just had a camp out last week, which was canceled due to bad weather. Mm. Well, we actually went there, and then we were all wet, and it got into the 30s, and we left.
Really? So you didn't earn the badge?
We were there for one night.
Oh, you were. Okay. And was your dad a scout as well?
Yes.
Eagle Scout?
Life.
A life scout?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Right
close.
Next to eagle.
Is that what it means? Close?
Close, but not the real eagle.
Well, you know, we have an Eagle Scout in the room tonight.
No.
Do you know that? Literally, there's an Eagle Scout in this room this evening. He holds a very important position in the city of Geneva. Any idea who that might be? And if you guess me, then I'm going to ground you.
Why don't you give him a clue as to what his merit badge was?
Fire. No, I'm just kidding. The city clerk is an Eagle Scout. What troop, Mr. City Clerk? That's true.
Yeah,
what troop were you in?
What troop were you in?
Troop 37.
That's the one I was in.
Yeah.
Oh. Isn't that cool?
Isn't
that awesome? And what year did you earn your Eagle Scout?
1958.
Huh?
What was that?
Everybody's like, wow.
There was a gasp.
1958.
And there was no big project, right?
That's when everybody started fire by rubbing sticks together.
Really?
Yeah, then he got demoted and became city clerk. It was unbelievable.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. Any other Eagle Scouts in the room? Oh, this gentleman back there. Wow. Stand up, sir. We need a... Well, we know you. Good Lord. You're our favorite visitor. 1943 Eagle Scout? Really?
You see?
Wow, that's pretty cool. You guys have you guys are among some pretty you got some high standards here. Big shoes to fill. 1948, 1858, unbelievable.
Mayor, would it be appropriate that the Eagle Scouts led the pledge tonight?
Well, I want the Eagle Scouts and Troop 37. Absolutely, that'd be awesome. But guess what? We have Mr. Hill on the phone, who actually this year sold the most Girl Scout cookies. Alderman Hill, are you with us?
I ate them all.
Yes, he did. Yeah. That's why he's homesick tonight.
Okay.
1,000 thin mints. Okay, folks, Mr. Clerk, how's it going? You wish to take the roll call?
Don't do it. Chuck Brown?
Here.
Ralph Dantino?
Here.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Here.
Sam Hill?
Here.
Greg Maladra?
Here.
Richard Marks?
Here.
Ray Pollock?
Here.
Robert Piper?
Here.
Ron Singer?
Here.
Don Vogelsberg?
Here.
My apologies. For the record, ladies and gentlemen, Alderman Hill... Oh, I'm sorry, Henry. If you'd like, you can, by all means, have a seat.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Uh-huh. I thought your speech was exquisite.
Thank you.
Nice job. Which one's your dad, so I can avoid him? Mm-hmm. Over there? Oh, there. Oh, God. There. So you're a lifer, huh?
Yes, sir.
That's awesome, man. Are you proud of your son?
Absolutely.
Any other children?
Yes.
Thanks for the details. Appreciate it. This isn't the Red Menace. I mean, it's like...
Recorded, right? I have five other children.
Five? Big drinker, are you, sir? That'll be erased from the tape, too, by the way. Wow, how old are they?
They range from 12 through 18 months.
Fantastic. How's therapy going?
I see
going?
Why you're here tonight.
Wow.
I'll take them.
So the kids are home alone tonight, the rest of them?
They're with Mom.
Okay, good. Troop 37, please join us in the middle of the room. And Eagle Scouts, please join the troop as you see fit. I would invite the Eagle Scouts and Troop 37 to please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And gentlemen, we will follow your lead, okay?
Wait a minute here.
Hang on a minute.
Eagle Scout. Look at that.
Well done.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen.
That's cool.
There's got to be some value in receiving these signatures and the autographs of the 1943 and 1958 Eagle Scouts, don't you think? I think so. Don't you think, Mr. Clerk?
I sure do.
Not monetary.
Very creative.
Item number three, there is no such business. Item number four, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments this evening from any member of...
How about the public hearing?
Oh, forgive me. My apologies, folks. Tonight, as most of you know, we're here for a couple matters, the regularly scheduled council meeting, but perhaps most importantly, we have the 2011-2012 fiscal year city budget on the agenda. Traditionally, a public hearing opens that matter. If anyone wishes to speak to the budget, that's the chance to do so, including members of the council. That public hearing is then closed, and then in the normal course of the city council meeting, we then vote on the budget. But tonight, I'm going to ask the council members and the community who is present that if no one objects, I'd like to actually alter the agenda slightly and address some of the topics of business that were addressed last week at the Committee of the Whole and hold the budget hearing after that. And vote on it. No objection? Great.
Nope.
Any amendments to the agenda as the agenda is presented? There's no amendment necessary to alter that order, if you will. So, item number five is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine, and they can be enacted by one motion.
So moved.
Motion by Alderman Singer.
Second.
Seconded by Alderman Marks. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call. Alderman Hill, of course, per Illinois statute, needs to state his name, cast his vote.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Alderman Hill votes aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
The omnibus agenda passes unanimously. We skip down to item number 10, municipal bills for payment. We kindly ask our city clerk, Eagle Scout of 1958, to please read the bills to be paid.
Bills for payment total $1,885,703.20.
Mayor, I move that we approve and pay the bills as read. The individual bills are displayed on the city's website in the city council packet.
Second.
The motion to pay the bills as read and displayed on the city's website is offered by Alderman Brown. That second is offered by Alderman Flanagan. Are there any questions or comments from the council and or community? Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Alderman Hill votes aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
The motion to pay the bills was passed unanimously. We skip down, as stated earlier, to item 11B, as in boy. Item 11B, as in boy, is to consider ordinance number 2011-24, amending the zoning ordinance definition of the term bed and breakfast inn. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Vogelsberg, seconded by Alderman Singer. This matter is on the floor for discussion or questions. I believe we have Mr. DeGroot and Mr. Unch with us this evening. Just Mr. Unch. Fair enough. From the council, Alderman Maladra.
Hi. last week I voted against this motion, but that's because I was confused. I had this map, and I thought that what the result of the motion was that every property in the red circle would wind up being eligible for a B&B. You're shaking your head. I get it now. But why else did you put the red circle on the map? So now that I understand what we're really trying to do and that the B&B must still front Route 38, 31, or 25, or 64, or 91, or 80, I'm going to change my vote and vote in favor of this because it adds just 11 properties that already meet most of the criteria except for the driveway location. I get it now.
A weekend of golf.
But it did.
Fresh air.
Alderman Flanagan tried to explain it to me.
Anyone else from the council? Comments on item 11B and or questions? Alderman Singer?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I voted favorably for the issue, and I am going to, of course, vote favorably for it as well. And I want to express my views as to why I am defending my vote. May I do so?
Certainly, sir. This, of course, is technically speaking. Your comments should be germane to the item 11B,
correct,
which is the definition itself.
Correct.
Not so much the item 11C, which would be the site itself.
Correct.
Okay.
Many of us live in the city of feel Geneva is a charming community, which we call home. I wonder how many of our community members have had the pleasure to visit the charming communities of Galena or Door County, Charleston, South Carolina, or even Dublin, Ireland, and stayed in a B&B. Would one not agree that staying in those establishments helped to enrich those communities' revenue sources? As Mr. Ruby, who's the Vice President of Operations of the Harrington Inn and Spa, indicated in an email forwarded to me with his permission, he stated, quote, "This proposed business would clearly enhance Geneva as a destination for out-of-town guests who will dine in our restaurants and shop in our stores," unquote. However, there are some in the community who feel the establishment will have a negative impact on property taxes or property values. Well, for the first time in many years, the majority of home assessments dropped in 2009, and another 22% were unchanged from last year. May one assume that this is a consequence of one living next to a B&B? I don't think so. Like it or not, foreclosure sales have an impact on the real estate market, and they tend to lower the value of homes in the neighborhood. The Plan Commission found that the except in the sense of the finding of facts, and they felt very honestly that the participants did meet those facts and finding, and I also feel that the staff tended to agree with the decision, and certainly I will do as well, and I will be voting favorably for this issue. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else from the City Council wishing to comment on item 11B and or ask questions of Director Unsch or the City Attorney or City Administrator? As has been stated before and by last week's chair of the Committee of the Whole meeting, these are not technically open, excuse me, good Lord, these are not technically public hearings per se. However, it's been the practice of really the City of Geneva for umpteen years that if anybody wishes to speak to matters, although it's not technically a public hearing, we invite you to do exactly that. If you're willing to brave the elements and join us in this august chamber, then you have a right to speak. So if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to comment on item 11B, we certainly welcome your comments. We simply ask that you join us at the podium. For the record, state your name and address, and the floor is yours. Yes, sir. Mr. Eagle Scout of 1943. I'll never forget that. Please don't bring your cane. It scares the hell out of me. So, sorry, kids, I shouldn't use that word. I apologize.
I apologize for the cane, and my conversation is limited, too, because of Parkinson.
What's his name?
And my buddy at the Harrington, Mr. Ruby, and I had breakfast together a few days ago. And I think that he surprised me, and I surprised him. But I met also with Mrs. Lido. And I have a few comments to make.
The floor is yours, sir.
First of all, I think you all, I watched the both broadcasts of the Committee of the Whole this last week. I was unable to make the meeting. I didn't know about the last meeting. You made a comment that when Carla speaks, the lady who's in charge of historical properties or districts, you tend to agree with her. I found that my experience, which has been through real estate for a lot of years at the Northern Trust Company, I reviewed a lot of appraisals, and I know it for a fact, doesn't matter what kind of property, if it has historical landmark designation or is in a district area, they automatically sweat 25 to 50% off the value. The reason being, and I think maybe Carla is not doing her job the way it should be done, is that Carla should be here and testifying to the impact of a historical district. I read with gumption an article written by someone I never heard of before in the Patch, and he's the gentleman who was sitting right here during the program. I know he watched very intently. He wrote a very good article, and he voiced his opinion. Well, that was one situation. The other situation I noted was the meaning of notification to owners. I live at 200 North River Lane, first of three condominium properties that Chodine built, and we've been there, it will be 12 years in June of this year. I've met the good mayor for many occasions. My grandson has been here honored for his artwork, and I get the same questions. Are you here again? Well, I am here again to voice as a citizen, saying that I think that there are some questions related to the approval process question. When I first testified, I think on April 10th or somewhere around, I said I was here to learn. After I learned that the citizens of the community, primarily the residents of the district, testified, I felt very compassionate for that position. From a value standpoint, I know that I went to the county, not the county, to the township assessor past fall. Without pleading a case, she reduced my assessment readily. I don't know what's going to be the result based on what the tax rate will be. From an assessment standpoint, she lowered to me what I paid for in 1999. I testified before the Board of Review the following year. And I was asked the question, Mr. Cohen, why do you think your assessment is too high? I said, I overpaid for the property. What do you mean by that? I showed him the list of extras that I paid for, because they were included in the total price, $268,000. He said, I paid $15,000 for the cabinetry. He said, my, Mr. Cohen, you did overpay, and you knocked it off. That was the first time I met the new then assessor. I was very angry that they gave me that, but I was happy to get it. Following year, I came back. I haven't seen it reduced until this past year. When I went and apologized to the lady assessor, and I said, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to argue with you, to come back and talk. And she knocked off from about $300,000 to $268,000. Now, I think that I hope it holds, but if it doesn't, I was thinking of maybe contesting it again before the Board of Review, and the property was really listed originally at 242. It was the extras in terms of carpentry and other things that are special to the unit, some of which we call property, not real estate. However, we've only added two things the 12 years we've been there. We put in two fixtures in the ceiling, and we just painted the whole unit. I don't call those as major problems, other than the maintenance. Not what I call enhancement of real estate. So that was another reason. I attended the meetings with Mr. Rogers, who was the chairman, and the announced vote was 9-1. The one being Mr. Rogers himself, which I thought was kind of strange. I added my question about valuation. The valuation process is a difficult one because it's a one man's opinion. And usually the definition is a willing buyer, willing seller, each knowledgeable at highest best use and for cash. Reasonable time for marketing. The notices, I thought, I got a notice that was with the unshred sign. I found out a few days ago that it was really the applicant herself, supposedly responsible, selling out 150 some odd notice. I know a lot of people in our building didn't get it. I think it's an important issue. Proper notice. I know signs were put in front of the property and it was published, but I don't know how many people are reading those things. The other things are basically I spoke at a meeting that you, Mayor, held, a few of us dissidents, and you pointed to me, I don't know what it was, but I'm going to ask you the question. You said you would have to vote a positive yes if, in fact, you didn't hear anything that was genuinely important to the process. He said, except for what Ed Cohen mentioned. Well, he mentioned two things. Can I ask you now what the one thing that you investigated and attributed to Maurice? Yeah, I think I know what it was. I'd like you to tell me. You would.
There was a couple. I'm concerned about naming one publicly, but I believe the one issue was relative to whether or not there were calls made to the property currently.
I received an email from a realtor in the California area asking and saying, if your property is for sale, I have buyers for your property.
Oh, I see.
No idea who in the world made that pitch. I mentioned that.
Yes, you did.
To you, and I mentioned it also to Ms. Layden a few days ago. I don't know who did it. But, you know, all these things sort of materialize in your mind why these things happen. I had called my friend Mr. Ruby and asked if he would set up a meeting with Don, the chairman of the committee on last Monday. And she was not in the meeting. And I said I'd like to bring a person who is more skilled and knowledgeable about the process, and that was Mr. Jack Hershel. And he said, no, that won't be necessary. It was really just the three of us. At the end of that, Mr. Ruby asked me if I was satisfied. I asked one question of which I was concerned about, whether the units were air-conditioned. She assured me they were. That was a weird question I had in my mind. And certainly Mr. Unch's committee had no reason to investigate that part of it in terms of what they said. And certainly none reported that, in fact, it was air-conditioned. To the extent people could be congregated who were staying at the proposed bed and breakfast, and there was a time limit set. I said, what, in fact, if it was a hot day and they didn't want to go inside? She said, no, the air conditioning is central and it works. So that was a question that I got a positive answer to my list of questions. All in all, I feel that the question on a historical landmark as it pertains to the type of effect on neighborhood values was an important one. because I don't know any historical landmark. I advised Linda. She should check with her insurance company, see what they would do. In fact, they had a calamity or a total loss, would you be able to rebuild it? These are questions I think they'll have some impact on value. I reviewed on average 100 appraisals a year based on my responsibilities. I had trust services at Northern and had a lot of professional designation. But I think that basically it's a subject I love and know about value. And because I came to the first meeting and I wanted to learn, and I learned the published what you thought you were going to charge and the size of the rooms didn't equate what people would pay from $116 to $199 a night room rent. I told her I wanted her to succeed, didn't want her to fail. And that's one of the big questions I have. Because of the stretch, the committee of the whole listened to the things that the committee had infused into the approval process recommendation. They had stated that there are certain things she still had to encounter in the midst of a terrible borrowing time for funds based on the amount of money she's already spent to it. There's a lot of questions in my mind, the possibilities of success. The 11 candidates that Mr. Singer was alluding to gave him some reason to support it. What was it? Well, you mentioned that as the reason you changed your time. Because you thought that all the red zones. I just think 11, they're all rooming houses now, for the most part. And there'll be a proliferation of those. That, to me, would cause another problem. We have traffic problems. It was made as if it wasn't a real important item. But I think it would be a very important item. People trying to go west, Dayton, across 31, have to tackle the vision problem of looking north on 31 and seeing a sea of houses that have driveways for garages and cars impeding the process of crossing the road. That was my personal feeling. I was especially proud of the fact that Mr. Brown is my alderman. I think you did a magnificent job in explaining how you broke it down to the two processes.
Thank you.
You made some comments relative to the Plan Commission in terms of what they wrote and what, in fact, was they found out by due diligence. I think your comments were very germane to the situation. The Calandra, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, I felt he too was to be commended at the time he voted against it for the reasons he gave. And also Mr. Pollock, you too gave some substantial reasons why you voted against. And the vote of 5-5 is a very tender vote when the mayor had a vote to break the tie. I think it's very difficult to measure the success of something based on a vote like that. Those are my thoughts, and I thought I'd share them with you and say I hope she does succeed, but I think that I had hope maybe we can get a few people to maybe listen to their cohort and say that I think, listen to some of the comments I just made. Maybe they might think otherwise. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you for the time.
Quick question, just how's Mrs. Cohen doing? Well?
you got to put up with me.
I was going to say, she probably just turned the channel, for God's sake.
So. It's very, very difficult.
Give her our love, okay?
I will, definitely. Okay. Thank you.
Alderman Vogelsberg?
Oh, thank you. Mr. Cohn, I just wanted to apologize for missing the meeting Friday. Anytime Mr. Ruby's in the room, he doesn't really need anybody else, but my son was sick, so sometimes I like to make him think they come first.
I never asked the reason. I never asked the reason.
Oh, no, but I apologize for missing it.
I accept it.
Thank you.
I think also that you ran a good meeting. You laughed a lot, showed a lot of maybe nervousness about it, but I didn't hold it against you.
Well, thank you.
Too much.
Anyone else in the audience regarding item 11B, as in boy, regarding simply changing the language in the current text to redefine the definition of a bed and breakfast inn?
Call the question.
Question has been called. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call. An aye vote supports changing the definition. A nay vote obviously does not.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph D'Antino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Alderman Hill votes aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Aye. Item 11B passes unanimously with 10 affirmative votes. We move on to item 11C, ladies and gentlemen. 11C is to consider ordinance number 2011-25, granting a special use for a bed and breakfast inn at 109 Peyton Street. In order to discuss this matter, a motion must be offered.
So move.
Second.
Alderman Singer makes the motion, seconded by Alderman Flanagan. This matter is on the floor for discussion, questions, deliberation, clarification. We begin with the City Council. From the City Council, any questions or comments for either Director Unge, City Attorney Radovich, Mrs. McKittrick, or whomever? Alderman Maladra.
Just comments, not questions. This is one of the few times where I'm uncertain about what to do. My gut tells me one thing. Everybody who was here last week knows that I have concerns. They boil down to this. I have a concern about waking up one day next to a business. You think you live in a residential neighborhood. The next morning you wake up and you're next to a B&B, which is in fact a business. We can say it's a low-intensity use, a low-intensity business, but so is a law office, and we don't allow law offices in the middle of residential neighborhoods. So my gut tells me one thing, but what it's telling me is based on feeling. It's based on very strong feeling. But is that fact? And I think that what we're called upon is to make decisions based on fact. The facts are, right now under our zoning ordinance, even without the change that we just made, B&Bs are allowed in residential neighborhoods. In some communities, they're only allowed in residential neighborhoods. Another fact is that most of the people who I've heard from who oppose this B&B tell me that they favor a B&B somewhere in town. And that makes me a little bit nervous that we get into a situation where we say, well, it's okay in Jerry's backyard, but not in my backyard. That's problematic for me, and I think that's problematic for the community if we start making decisions that way. Residents have cited concerns about parking and traffic and things like that. If you think about it, I don't know that we can reach a factual conclusion about B&B bringing in more parking or traffic issues than a duplex with a working parent and a couple of teenagers. That could add up to a lot of cars, a couple of them big noisy cars. That's opinion again, and that's where I get in trouble. Evidence from other communities based on complaints received from neighbors. I mean, we all hear, okay, I stayed in a B&B and it was really nice. That doesn't mean that the neighbors were happy to have me there. I kind of think maybe they weren't. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, if you look at Galena, or if you look at Ann Arbor, Michigan, or something like that, and you base your thoughts on the number of complaints about the B&Bs received from neighbors, there is no evidence that says that it's a detriment to the neighborhood. So again, I think I'm gonna change my vote. My gut's telling me this is not a great idea. You need to know that. But I'm not here to make decisions just based on what I feel. I have to let facts into the picture somewhere, which really sort of stinks. But the facts just don't indicate that my gut is in line on this issue. Did that make any sense at all?
Yes.
No.
Thank God.
Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think Alderman Malagra segues into what I want to say. I also voted against it last week, and I continue to feel it's just not a right fit. But I also questioned what we received from the Plan Commission, the findings of fact. They seem to have, and I was told, yes, indeed, they're written by the staff. So I went back and looked at the transcript of the Plan Commission meeting and was appalled to find out that when each one of the findings of fact was read, there was basically no questions at all, although the transcript is, the minutes are not verbatim minutes, but each item was followed by there was no comment by the commission. And as you all know, I like to ask questions, and I can immediately think of at least two or three questions that I would want to ask about each one of them. For instance, number two talks about property values, and I don't think there's anyone here who is sure that this is not going to diminish property values. I'm quite convinced it probably will. Number three and four talk about parking issues, and the staff states there are none, and traffic issues. As our senior Eagle Scout has pointed out, that's a bad corner. I try to get out of there most mornings, and it's a terrible corner for parking on Peyton and for the traffic trying to get from Peyton onto Route 31. So I would disagree with number two, number three, number four. I disagree with all of them. Number eight talks about the proposed building and complies with all regulations, and the staff responses the existing improvements comply with bulk regulations of the R3 zoning district, as well as the existing building. The existing building does not. It's nonconforming, and nobody asked about that. Number nine talks about the proposed addition has no variance with the rest of the neighborhood. Well, this addition will push right to the very limits of the R3 zoning requirements, right to the very limits, will fill the zoning box. And there's certainly not most of the houses in this district don't do that at all. This is really trying to put 10 pounds of tomatoes in a 5-pound box, in my estimation. So when I go through these nine findings of fact, I'm first surprised that we get no indication from the Planning Commission that there was any discussion at the level at which they were asked to discuss them when this came up. It was all just, there was no comment from the commission. And second, I myself question, as I say, I can write down two questions on each one of the nine findings of the fact, which I find are not answered anywhere in the record that I went back and reread. So I will continue to vote against it. Thank you.
Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. I voted against this last week, and I will continue to vote against it. The criteria I used were simple. I put myself in the shoes of the neighbors, and how would I feel if I lived in the neighborhood and the zoning next door to me was going to be changed to accommodate one specific use. I feel this is what is called forced zoning. And secondly, I agree with Alderman Brown, specifically finding a fact number two, where that says the proposed building or use will not diminish the value of adjacent or nearby properties. There was no expert testimony presented. Honestly, the only expert testimony we've heard was tonight from Mr. Cohn, who was the head of trust services at the Northern Trust. And he spoke to the diminution in value for buildings in a historic district, which could be as low as 25%. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the dais?
Can I follow?
If no one objects, I'll recognize Alderman Malagra for a second time. Alderman Malagra?
Ray, you hit the nail on the head. Is when I was talking about what my gut tells me, the problem is how do we stand there and say definitively that this type of business Well, so first of all, I'll address the four zoning thing. The zoning, the way it is today, allows this use. If we deny this use, we're putting ourselves, I worry, that we're in a situation of more spot zoning. Everybody says a B&B in town would be good somewhere, but we sit here and say, okay, it's good in this spot, but not this spot, but not this spot. That seems to me to be more forced zoning than anything. The way the ordinance is written, the way the ordinance has been written since the 90s, is that this use is allowed, period. That's what the law states. As far as whether I would like to wake up to this someday, probably not. But again, when you look at what happens in other communities, and I'm referring specifically to Galena and Ann Arbor, Michigan, the home sell, the complaints are nil. I feel the same way you do, but the facts don't support it. And are we here to vote based on feeling, or are we here to make decisions like this based on fact? So I just wanted to say that because the first part of his comments echo my feelings, but I don't think that that's an appropriate driver for the decision. Thank you.
From the dais, Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess that kind of is what I was, how I feel about it or think about it, because this is our zoning. It's it is allowable with a special use permit, which we have a lot of times for things. So we've already made this a zoning policy, and if we think it's wrong, maybe we need to go back and change it, but we can't change it while we're discussing a property on that. And just like we talked about before on the Plan Commission, I mean, somebody gave me a printed copy of the packet, which I had read online, but when you see the public testimony, the hours the Plan Commission spent listening, thinking, discussing, and having been on Plan Commission, you don't always debate everything like on the special use, because that reflects what you've already said all those meetings. So I think that because of the zoning that we have in our ordinance and the recommendation from the Plan Commission, that I feel like that's, we need to follow our own zoning. Thank you.
Alderman Piper.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to be clear, I believe, unless I misheard, please correct me, when Mr. Cohn came up and made the statement about diminished value of 25%, that was a sweeping statement of historic districts in general, not specific to this property or bed and breakfast in general. My fear of bringing in expert testimony on a bed and breakfast, especially in this type of special use situation, is we can grab a real estate agent from Galena, and we can grab one from this area, and we can get either one of them to say whatever we want, and I don't think we're going to get expert anything. I think this is going to have to be a gut check situation from 10 of us. That, unfortunately, is what we're going to have to deal with. Thanks.
Anyone else from the dais? From the audience, anyone wishing to speak to item 11C, you're more than welcome to join us at the podium. Mr. Holscher, good to see you again, sir.
Nice seeing you, Mayor and Alderman. I'm not going to beat a dead horse.
Jeff, we all know who you are, of course, but just for the record,
a lot of
people have been asking about you who thought you were very attractive.
Well, that's John E. Holscher, Jack Holscher, 128 North 1st Street, Geneva. The property immediately adjacent, actually on the, just
you.
South of the subject B&B on Peyton Street. Just want to a few quick comments, and we beat this, quote, dead horse, I think, more than necessary. But first of all, response to Alderman Singer, there's been a lot of this should not be a referendum on B&Bs. Everybody knows B&Bs work. But they work in the proper location, the right spot, the good location, the place where there's adequate parking without changing the front lawn of a place so that there's adequate parking. They work where there's wide streets, where the narrowness of the streets doesn't pose difficulty in navigation. So to the point that that Alderman Brown made, this spot just isn't the right spot. But there are right spots around town. That's the other piece of this thing that I think we're not considering. The Nottolini House has always been talked about as an example, but there are others, 122 East State Street, and all over town I think there's a good example, South Street. But not standing, I'd make the point that that there seems to be some sense of equity here. It's sort of balancing the rights of this applicant for her special special use against the rights of our neighbors. I just quote from a Supreme Court case here, an Illinois Supreme Court case, that a diminution in value and loss in the quiet enjoyment of one's property caused by additional traffic and noise created by a proposed special use was adequate in this case to confer standing to those who wanted to be heard. Now, that's not the issue here, but this idea of peace and quiet and what we've come to expect. There are a group of neighbors here whose neighborhood is going to be upset by this. Now, to what extent, we don't know. To Alderman Maladra's point, we don't know. We don't know what it's going to have on property values. We don't know what impact it's going to have on neighborhood and activity and commotion and traffic and lights going on and off. And because we don't know, we should vote no. Until we know, we should vote no. And I think that's my point. Other than that, I just add a few more. There's four things that essential points of view that we have here. The inappropriateness of putting a business, a commercial activity, in an old residential neighborhood. We see this as a slip-sliding watershed event. Once we get into north of Hamilton Street or south of Campbell, it's a slip-sliding thing. It's going to, I think, grow, and the town will begin to look like many of the towns in northern Illinois that we all know about. But I don't want to mention and alienate somebody, but I think that there's this risk, and that's what we're fighting. It has nothing. It has something to do with property values, because I don't think anybody here knows exactly what's going to happen, but my point is, if we don't know, then we shouldn't vote for it. But on the other hand, I think there's some sentiment that the property values will be impacted. The size of the B&B, we talked about the scale. We think there's too many rooms in too small a location, and I think that's the point. And that goes to the 9 standards, and all of those standards speak somehow to this issue of the character of the neighborhood, the impact on the neighborhood, and the impact that this activity, this special use, will have. The fairness and effectiveness of the city's review process. I think the key word I would use is rationale. There's no rationale, when I look at the transcript, no rationale. There wasn't a discussion point by point. There was in the committee as a whole, but the Plan Commission didn't look at each point and evaluate the substance of what was being said point by point. I think that's a really critical thing here, because we don't really know why they voted the way they did. And I think that's important. And then finally, the operational and marketing concerns. We don't know whether this thing is going to work or not. If it's voted for and it goes into operation, we certainly hope it doesn't fail. But if it does, there's the reuse issues, and we're really concerned about that. And it puts a burden on us neighbors. We don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. So we're going to have to sit there for the next period of time while the applicant does the renovations and does the marketing, and we're going to have to wonder whether or not it's going to work or not. It really puts us in a very – we're losing something. Something's being taken from us and without full consideration. So I ask you all to reconsider your vote. Those who are waffling here, don't do it. It's in the best interest of Geneva, in the best interest of the historic district, in the best interest of all of us to hold the line on this and not make the same mistakes that many other communities have in eroding these old neighborhoods over some good idea or bad idea, as the case may be. Thank you much. I took more time than I wanted to.
Thank you, Mr. Holscher. One moment, Ms. Leiden. Alderman Maladra, relevant to the points offered by Mr. Holscher, and then, of course, the floor is returned to the audience. Yeah. I'll recognize Ms. Leiden.
Jack?
Mr. Brown?
Would you? So.
Be advised that in a formal council meeting, the comment should be made to the chair.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Since we will prevent discussion between.
Okay, Mr. Holscher. His comments, like Ray's, echo mine in many ways, but they also highlight, I think, the pain points of the issue. One, he mentioned everyone knows a B&B works in the right spot. And then he went on to talk about certain properties that he feels would be good locations for a B&B. That's a very tricky situation for us, because the way the law is written, we can't say this address is good for a B&B and this address is and this address is. That's the spot situation that I was thinking we have to try to avoid. I really have a problem with saying that if we're unsure, then we should wait, because then when we go to another property and they're talking about a B&B, those neighbors are going to be saying the exact same things that these neighbors are saying. And so I guess with that uncertainty, we should wait again. And if you follow it to the logical conclusion, I guess then what we're saying is that a B&B doesn't work. But that's not what we're saying at all. We all know that they do work, and that such a use will enhance our community. The spread of the business district is something I'm very concerned about, have been for a long time. But again, this isn't spreading the business district. B&Bs are and have been since the 90s allowed in the residential zoning district. It's not a change. It's the way things have been. So it's not a spread of the business district. If a B&B goes in at property A, that doesn't mean that a quaint little bookshop is going to go in at property B, which is also residential. It's not the same issue. So although I agree with a lot of what Mr. Holscher said, some of the feelings that he expressed illustrate the conflicts that we wind up with if we listen to our guts and don't follow the facts. In my
Alderman Brown?
I'd just like to add the point to what Mr. Holscher said, that item number 9 in the findings of fact has to do with whether the proposed structure is in variance with the neighborhood. It does note here that the exterior changes must be reviewed and approved by the Historic Preservation Commission before the addition, which is the fifth bedroom, can be issued. But the answer to the text under number 9 says, in staff's opinion, the proposed changes comply with the historic preservation requirements. So the item findings of fact here are not findings of fact by our plan commission. They're findings of fact by our staff. And I agree with Mr. Holscher. I went through the record in great detail a second time, and I disagree with the alderman who spoke earlier. I did not find in their discussion of any of these 9 in depth by the plan commission. I heard them addressed by many people who gave testimony, but I didn't hear anywhere the plan commission actually addressing the 9 arguments, the 9 findings of fact. And to me, these findings of fact by the staff. And I'm more interested in what the plan commission, who is made up of fellow citizens, and what citizens in this room are telling us than what our staff, because the staff is doing their job. They're doing it well. But somehow, to me, findings of fact should not be the staff's reply. It should be a reply from the plan commission. I just didn't get that through reading any of the testimony or reading what I see here, especially when it says, when the answer to the finding of fact is the staff's opinion is. So anyway, I'm quite unhappy with the procedure whereby we get information through this whole process, because we seem to be getting only the information that comes from the staff. Thank you.
I think Alderman Brown's comments, if Ms. Lydon will permit me, certainly call for an explanation from our Director of Community Development, Mr. Dick Unch. And for all of you present tonight, I thank you in advance for your patience. This is an important issue for many people, and perhaps Mr. Unch's comments will help edify all of us with respect to the history of this process, why the Plan Commission operates the way it does, why our professional staff provide the ramparts, if you will, for consideration by the appointed officials.
I feel I need to make some comments
and
here.
Dick, please introduce yourself to...
Yes, I'm Dick Unch. I'm Director of Community Development for the city. First, let me say this, that for many, many years, the Community Development Department staff has acted as staff liaison to the Plan Commission. Our role, and the reason why we've been hired by the city, is to provide guidance to the Plan Commission in the conduct of its public hearing processes and other review processes that it conducts. And it's charged by city code to perform. We are considered as staff, as technicians, when it comes to the requirements of our zoning ordinance and our subdivision regulations and other components of the municipal code. And we're charged with the responsibility of advising the Plan Commission on the various matters that come before it. We provide a recommendation on every special use request, every zoning request. We look very carefully at each one of the applications that are presented before public hearing and review by the Plan Commission. Let me say that there has been discussion that the finding of the Plan Commission is the staff finding, and I have a little bit of a twisting that's going on in my stomach right now when I hear those words, because the fact is that we do an analysis of the nine special use standards, and we do that in the interest of providing a full and complete body of information for the Plan Commission in making its determination and its finding. Staff cannot control what the applicant presents, what testimony the applicant presents, and it certainly can't control what the public presents in the way of testimony and information to the Plan Commission. It's the role of the Plan Commission to review the testimony provided by the applicant, the testimony provided by the community at large, and the staff's advisory comments that are provided to it, and to make a finding. In our analysis, we walk through the nine special use standards. And I know that the Plan Commission, I think it heard at least 3 hours of public hearing testimony. It might have been more than that. Might have been like 3.5, something like that. And again, the Plan Commission is fully capable of defending itself and its actions. My own sense is that they listened to all of the testimony. From a staff perspective, we attempted in our staff memo, the last memo that was prepared prior to the council commission making its finding and recommendation, we attempted to synthesize the 3 or 3.5 hours of testimony that was provided. And we characterized that in a staff memo, again, in the interest of trying to draw together the critical facts. And I want to make another point while I interrupt myself here. We're running this review process, and we are not an advocate for the applicant, and we are not an advocate for the community. We are working to balance all of the information that we can pull together on a given case. We are administrators of the process, so we have to be diligent when it comes to matters of a proper public notice, making sure that the application materials have been properly filed with the city on each application, making sure that there's a clear understanding of the review process. So we're administering the review process from day to day to day. But at the same time, in the end, we're required to provide some staff commentary and a recommendation to the Plan Commission. So if the Plan Commission made its findings of fact and largely based it on the analysis that the staff gave, it doesn't mean that they didn't listen to the public hearing testimony for 3.5 hours. What I think it does mean is that perhaps the staff analysis hits some of the marks that they felt were consistent with their point of view, and that they made a conscious fact finding based on the actual information that was presented by staff, by the applicant, and by the folks that in the public that provided testimony. I'm rambling a bit, but I just want to make the point that this was a Plan Commission fact-finding that was made. Now, if there needs to be discussion in front of the Plan Commission or more commentary about the way they make their fact-finding, then so be it. Let's have that conversation. But clearly, the Plan Commission listened to all of the information that was submitted during that public hearing process, and it did make a fact-finding. People may not agree with it, but they did make a fact-finding.
Thank you, Director Unsch.
If I may respond, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman.
That's all right.
Okay. Alderman Brown, again, comments to the chair.
Thank you. The only question I had is when does an independent committee get to question findings of fact? And I didn't see anything in the written record of the Plan Commission that any of these, which I have a lot of trouble with, were questioned in any way. So maybe it's correct that now at the city council level we should question all of them, and as I say, I did, and I find at least 4 or 5 of them to be just not correct in my estimation, and that's why I will continue to vote against it.
Thank you.
Alderman Piper, Alderman Maladra.
I guess what I'm hearing, Dick, and take a deep breath. I guess what I'm hearing.
Comments of the chair.
I guess what I'm hearing is it was followed exactly the way it's supposed to be done by a committee, the Plan Commission, that's appointed by you.
Consent of the council.
Consent of the council. It's done exactly the way it's supposed to be done, and then it's given to us, and we go through it. I don't think, as far as I'm concerned, the other nine of us didn't have a problem, and from where I sit, Chuck, you owe an apology. That's what I think. Go ahead.
Alderman Maladra.
It sounds to me as if the Plan Commission was presented with the findings of fact, and the fact that there is no specific reference to them in the transcripts would indicate to me their acceptance of the findings of fact, that there were no question. I don't understand why Alderman Brown would think otherwise. We know that they were given the findings of fact by the staff. We know they didn't question those findings of fact. To me, that means only one thing. They were accepted. Thank you.
I may reply to those two ad hominem comments.
You may, as long as your comments are to the chair.
They are, Mr. Chairman. The problem I have, of course, is that the people who testify in front of the Plan Commission come from one of the two sides, presumably for or against. And what I'm looking for is some people who are presumably not from either side in to start to make to question some of these statements that are made by both the people who are for and the people who are against. And I don't see that in the written testimony anywhere. I see people who are for and people who are against making statements, and those being summarized by our staff, correctly summarized. But then I don't see a questioning of them. And as I say, I have questions on at least four of them. That's not the way I would have answered that particular finding of fact. So at this level, at the council level, I feel I have to bring that up, since it appears that nobody on the Plan Commission questioned any of the findings of fact. Thank you.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just kind of wanted to comment that if I believe that, and I've sat in on several Planning Commission meetings years ago, is that if the Planning Commissioner had any questions that they wanted to ask or question regarding any of the testimony or the matters of fact that was being brought up, that they would certainly question it. And I didn't see that in the transcript, that they had any questions that they felt were pertinent to a particular issue that they felt they needed clarification on. So I believe that they, in fact, did their job and reviewed it and came to a conclusion based upon the information given to them. So I have no problem with that process.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. All I was going to say is I agree there has to be impartial, and I believe that's the staff, and more importantly, that's the ordinance. Because when we are creating the ordinance, there is no issue. So we're thinking cleanly. And it is hard to decide. And, of course, we all feel with our gut. That's why it's so good for a big project like this to go through Plan Commission first. So they already shake out all the information. I think that's what we have zoning for. It's always emotional. I mean, just as you, Mayor, I sat years for Plan Commission. And not only do the you're encouraged to speak, Chairman Rogers calls on each person. So if you don't have the wherewithal to raise your hand, you are offered the opportunity to have your opinion. And I think we can all think of all the projects that there's so many fears. River North, don't take our sunlight, don't take our vision away, don't take our view of the river. All the fears that River North condos, because that was a landmark project. It's a wonderful project now. People love it because it's there and there's no fears. And I think, Radecki always said, it's never as bad as you think. So I think that is the impartial, the staff and the ordinance, so we can weigh the facts. Thank you.
Anyone else on from the dais? Ms. Lydon, I promise you would have the next turn at the podium. If you could, again, for the benefit of all present, and especially waking up the Boy Scouts. What time do you guys got to be home, man?
I'm Linda Lydon. I'm the applicant.
And I just thought maybe it would be better to have a visual of the property, because people are questioning what the bed and breakfast is going to look like, that it might be a little run down. So if we could show, Dick, do you have that? If we could show what the property was looked like when I bought it.
Now, again, we ask kindly that, of course, all comments are germane to item 11C.
That looks nice.
That does look
very
nice.
Very well done.
Wow. Well, no, I changed my vote now.
Okay, hold on. Now, this is what the property looked like when I purchased it. It was three families with two bathrooms. It was not in a very good condition. And 2 years later, I moved into the property, and, okay, how do we do this, Dick? Okay, down. Okay, this is what the property looks like today. And this property is what you is what's going to look like. It's not going to change. So the base bed and breakfast will look like this. There is a phase two that we will add. We'll put a new garage, which it really needs, put a new garage, and we'll put a second story onto the garage, which would be my residence. So that would give me another room in the bed and breakfast to make it five, but there will be four for a while. So, but that's exactly what the property looks like. The Fox Valley Association gave me an award for the improvements, which I was very honored about. And I just wanted everybody to know that this is 109 Peyton Street, and that's going to be called the Geneva Inn, hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leiden. From the audience, anyone else wishing to speak to the item 11C?
John Lance, 217 North 2nd Street in Geneva. I have to give you guys all credit for sitting up here every week on TV. It's a little intimidating. Just a couple of things, Mr. Maladra. I appreciate your comments a lot and your consideration, Mr. Pollack, as well. Obviously, a tough issue. I've lived in that neighborhood for 25 years. Bought the house from the, I want to say, the third owners. The original owners, and Jack can probably back me up on this, was Mrs. the Nelsons, who I think she was a teacher at 4th Street School, where my kids went to first grade school. So we bought in that neighborhood because it was a neighborhood in Geneva. And I guess, you know, two things I want to say. Number one, just wanted to publicly state my opposition to the bed and breakfast. I don't really have an opinion on bed and breakfast other than in my neighborhood. I don't want one. The second comment, or another comment I'll make, is that I love Galena. Been there many times. Never been to Ann Arbor. I'm more of a Purdue guy. But Galena's fun to visit, but I would never live in Galena. I want to live in a community that has a community feel to it. And this one hits really close to home because it's on my block. So looking through my backyard will be a bed and breakfast. So it changes the character and the nature of a residential community. And I believe that was somewhere in those 8 points of light that you have to go through to get something like this passed. So it's very personal to me. And, you know, from Craig's standpoint or Mr. Maladra's standpoint, you know, it's kind of a gut thing. Kind of a gut thing for me, too, because it's, you know, I can't pour through all of the details and things that are in the paperwork, but I can speak from a very personal standpoint, from a longtime resident of Geneva standpoint, and from a longtime member of that community, that I don't believe it's a good use. I don't believe it would be good for the nature and the character of the community. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lance. Anyone else from the audience? Yes, sir. Welcome.
My name is Tom Konopacki. I'm the owner of a business in Geneva. I own Anastasia, located at 447 South 3rd Street. And I would, you know, kind of like to give my opinions from a merchant's standpoint. I moved my business into Geneva in 2004, and Geneva seemed to have it all. It had a thriving downtown business community. It had an excellent chamber of commerce. It has a dedicated economic development department. The only thing that was missing, I felt, was a bed and breakfast in the downtown area. We've talked about Galena. We've talked about bed and breakfast. Everyone thinks they're great. What we're not realizing is the draw that these bed and breakfasts bring to the community. thousands of people flock to Galena every year to visit that community and spend their money. They flock to see the fall colors. They flock to see the turning, you know, the leaves on the trees. Guess what? We've got trees in Geneva. We've got fall color. We've got the beautiful Fox River, and with the, it's truly spectacular with the leaves turning on the Fox River. What we don't have is a charming, warm bed and breakfast feeling for these visitors to come stay in our community. I won't ramble on too long about that, but look at the economics of the downtowns. Many of our neighboring cities have downtowns that are struggling. Wheaton, Glen Ellen, Elmhurst, Downers Grove, just to name a few. All of them are experiencing store closings. Well, you may think Geneva has a healthy downtown business community, and we're doing fine in the wake of this recent recession. You see that storefronts may be filling up, but the truth is there are just as many existing businesses that are just hanging on by thread. The closing of Mill Race Inn should be a wake-up call to all of us. Many residents were shocked that this icon of Geneva went out of business. But then when was the last time these residents had a meal there? Viking Office Supply is gone. Again, another Geneva icon. So we have to take off our rose-colored glasses and realize that downtown Geneva is not immune. With gas prices on the rise again, many stores who are hoping to pull out from under this year may not make it. So with the uncertainty of this economy and the increased competition from the Randall Corridor and online shopping, we depend on visitors who come to downtown Geneva to keep our businesses thriving. Thankfully, we do get many visitors who shop at our boutiques, dine in our restaurants, and come to our festivals. But we need to make sure that we take every step to ensure that they keep coming. Many groups of shoppers make annual trips to Geneva. Wouldn't it be nice if they could all stay together in a charming little bed and breakfast and spend the weekend instead of just coming for the day and leaving at 3 o'clock? That's all I have.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, Carla Hibbard, 128 North 2nd Street. I own a plaque historic house on North 2nd in the corner of Payton for the last 22 years and have jumped through many hoops and spent great sums of money to expand my house and renovate and restore my house in keeping with the bylaws of Geneva. And I live on what I call a fringe community. It's a residential neighborhood, but we're right there downtown. And I love it. My children, you know, have walked everywhere. They, you know, I can't drive to a subdivision or find anyone else's house, but we're great where we are, and we love it, and we're there for a reason. But you pay a huge price. I've said it before, but there are a few new faces, so I'll say it again. We have the festivals, the great festivals of Geneva. We live and breathe them like no one who lives anywhere else in Geneva has any understanding. We are in the thick of it. I have had people having lunch on my patio. I've had people use our porta potties during construction at 3 in the morning. I've had people swinging on porch swings. You know, we get it. We pay a lot to be living in this area. We listen to the backup beepers. We listen to the snow plows dumping snow into the river. And we pay a very, very high price to live in our little community that is a neighborhood, and it's residential. And I beg of you to hold on to the little bit we have that's still a neighborhood, because I'm really tired of having a really expensive house that I've lovingly taken care of in a neighborhood and just to have these businesses crouch in. And you can say a bed and breakfast isn't, you know, business. It's, you know, a special use or this or that. The fact of the matter is, and I'm sorry if you feel like I agree. I think a bed and breakfast would be great. And it's not that, and if there was a property in our neighborhood that suited better, that'd be great. But Payton Street is a nightmare to turn on. And so, no, I don't want it here. And maybe there's a huge empty lot in Mill Creek that would be great for that. And that's fabulous. You know, you wouldn't be listening to the backup beepers for $199 a night, because you're going to be on Payton and State Street. So I have nothing new to say, but I beg of you, this is not the right spot. It's a bad choice.
Thank you, Mrs. Hibbard. Anyone else in the audience on item 11C? The proud father of our soon-to-be Eagle Scout, the lifer.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tony Feldhaus, and I'm in 616 Richard Street. And this is new to me, but I have to just give you a gut. I think we're talking about gut. I work for the phone company. I'm a process engineer, and I talk about waste. I talk about going through a process and the rigor that it takes. So I understand.
I'm just impressed you admitted you work for the phone company. This is amazing.
It takes a lot.
Don't forget he has a bunch of kids at home that he's...
So here's my take, and sorry for the interruption. I admire somebody to inspire to do an entrepreneurship, to build a bed and breakfast. I look to do that. But I think we're in a community here. We're in a bedroom community, not a bed and breakfast community. When I picture going to a bed and breakfast, I think of R&R. Not shopping, not going to a raised downtown with all the little cute little malls or stores. So I guess the question that I would have is, what have we done on a case study to evaluate those that do go to bed and breakfasts? What do they look for? And are they looking for that here in Geneva, or are they just coming here to shop and not stay? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Did you get a picture of your dad up there? No, he doesn't photograph well, is that what you're saying? I know, I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at that dude behind you. Good Lord, you don't get your badge. Anyone else in the audience? I'm teasing you. Item 11C, this is regarding the specific site. Anyone else? Questions, comments, clarifications, statements? Anyone from the dais? Alderman Hill from home.
He fell asleep.
Alderman Hill, anything? Any comments?
I just cut you off.
I've been cut off by better people. No comments from Alderman Hill. No comments from the dais. Is everyone clear on the vote to be taken this evening? For clarification, item 11C is considered ordinance number 2011-25, granting a special use for a bed and breakfast inn at 109 Peyton Street. The motion was offered by Alderman Singer, seconded by Alderman Flanagan. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Chuck Brown.
Nay.
Rolf D'Antino.
Nay.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Alderman Hill votes aye.
Greg Maladra.
I vote aye.
Richard Marks.
Nay.
Ray Pollack.
Nay.
According to the chair's tabulations, we have 6 affirmative votes, 4 nay votes. The motion does pass. We thank the applicant, we thank the community, we thank the council and everyone for participating in the process. If there's no objection, if anyone needs to sneak out, now is the time to do so. Otherwise, we move on with the agenda. And without objection. You're leaving?
We have to go to work tomorrow. She's on vacation. Did you want to stay, Marie?
You want to stick around? Or do you want to sneak out?
Yeah, it's going to get worse.
You know what? Before you leave, let me introduce you,
yes,
please. Okay?
Thank you. Yeah, it would be good.
Thank
please.
You. And then
we'll let everybody else sneak out that needs to sneak out. Thank you.
Sometimes I hate this job.
Oh, I love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Introduce her since everybody clears up. Hey, scouts, you might want to stick around for this. I'm going to introduce a young lady who has a rare opportunity She is a proud Geneva resident, and she is one of only a handful of citizens, literally nationwide, to serve as a Senate page.
Yes, sir.
This young lady's name is Maureen Levy. Mm-hmm. She's with us this evening because she was thrown out of the Senate.
Yep, that's
is
what
that,
happened.
Is that what you
yep.
told me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's exactly actually home on break, and you've been serving in the Senate for how long now?
3 months, just over.
3 months. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool?
Yeah, I love it, definitely.
Well, tell us what's the most wicked experience thus far.
Well, I think my favorite thing to experience is the votes when all the senators are in one place and seeing them all converse with each other and seeing democracy in action, as you see here.
Is it really exciting, or do you roll your eyes sometimes and think, oh, my God?
It's pretty exciting. We've had a lot of exciting legislation, so
I bet.
That's been exciting. Sometimes it does get a little dull, but I'm happy to be there, and I'm happy for the experience, and definitely proud to be representing Geneva and Illinois.
Now, give us an example. How many pages were chosen for this session?
30. But
30 kids from across the country.
Right.
Excuse me, young men and women from across the country.
Yes.
30, that's it.
Yes.
And how many applied? Thousands.
Probably, yes.
Thousands. Young Maureen Levy from Geneva was selected.
Yes,
unbelievable.
Sir.
Isn't that cool? Are you keeping a blog or anything? You're really not allowed to write much, are you?
No, I'm not allowed to really talk about much until I'm done.
Well, I hope
done.
They don't see this broadcast. Because then we'll all be on a do not fly list. And it's like a major...
But I have been keeping a journal of all my experiences and people that I've met and things like that.
Who's the wackiest senator?
Oh,
that would probably be one of the things that I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh, come on.
Unfortunately.
Ms. Mayor, can she talk? She has a cool story about the desks and how they sign them.
Oh, that's very cool.
So the Senate has a lot of longstanding traditions. And one of the traditions is that any senator who has had a desk gets to sign their name in the desk. And so there's another desk. It's called the candy desk, which I showed Mr. Pollack when he came to visit with his family.
Wait a minute.
And
you gave Alderman Pollack a special tour? We all expect the same thing then.
Yes.
How much candy do you take?
There's usually either one or two senators that have the candy desk, and it's exactly what it sounds like. They fill their desk with candy. And currently one of the candy desks is Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois, who has President Obama's old desk. So it switched sides this year. But so if you ever watch C-SPAN, I don't know if you do that. Yep.
1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, that's true.
You can see the senators walking by his desk and grabbing things out. And usually the senator puts candy from their state. So for a long time it was the senator from Pennsylvania, and he put Hershey's
sure.
in there. So Senator Kirk has been putting Illinois candy in his desk. So I'm hoping to sneak some grams in before the end of my turn.
Well, you just said that publicly.
Maybe it won't be so sneaky, but that's okay.
when you're on the floor next, can you know? Because I watch C-SPAN and C-SPAN 2 and 3. Can you wave? And
I'll do a little ear.
You and Carol Burnett. That'd
yeah.
be awesome. Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. Maureen, you know, she did an awesome job when we were in Washington over spring break and gave us the grand tour. And I'd like to compliment you and your mom and dad, Dave and Bernadette Levy. You have a wonderful daughter. Absolutely wonderful, and you should be so proud. You certainly have a bright future. You know your way around the town there, and I look forward to seeing you and later in life and seeing what you ascend to. But I think the stars are awful bright for you, so congratulations and thank you.
Thank you.
Just one question. Who's the wackiest senator?
Mr. Mayor, may I ask a question?
Alderman Singer, yes, you may.
Thank you. How do they handle your education?
I go to, it's called the Senate Page School,
mm-hmm.
And it's actually located in the basement of the dorm that we stay in. And all of my credits will transfer so that I can go back to Geneva High School next year and graduate with the rest of my class. And I'm currently in an English class, a math class, a science class, and a social studies class, and then I chose to take Spanish tutoring on Sundays
oh, wow.
so that I can stay with that and go on to the next level of Spanish next year. So
you're a junior in high school?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? What's really amazing is that they actually teach math in Congress.
That was a good one.
That's usually my
Senator
job.
Senator Durbin. Problem in the motorcade. Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mayor. Maureen, I thought this was so fascinating. Talk a little bit about your roommates and how they divide you guys up.
Okay. Well, in our dorm, there's a boys' floor and a girls' floor. And on the girls' floor, we have three rooms, two rooms of six girls and one room of four girls. And I'm in the room, one of the rooms with six. So then there's five other girls from different states. And actually, it's kind of interesting because in my room, there's an even divide of three Democrats and three Republicans. So that can be pretty interesting at night. We get into some pretty heated debates, but we usually try and leave our policy at the door because we see each other for 24 hours a day. So at the dorm itself, we try and stop talking about that stuff so we can have a little bit of free time to do sort of normal stuff, I guess, and homework.
You can go out and hang out in the city and have a good time. And
On the weekends, we're free to do what we want, really. We just always have to go out with somebody else, which makes sense.
So safety. You can't be out by yourself?
No, never.
And
we've been taken on different field trips from the program, too, which has been really interesting also.
Cool. What are your hours of school and your hours of work in the Senate?
Okay, so I get up at 5 o'clock every morning, and I'm downstairs for school by 6 o'clock. School starts at 6:15, and then depending on what time the Senate convenes, that determines how long our school day will be. The longest school day we have is from 6:15 until 9:45, and that's if the Senate goes in past 11 o'clock, because we always have to get there an hour early to set up the senators' desks. So sometimes we have an hour of school, sometimes we have two. It really just depends.
Sitting, don't you?
What? I'm sorry?
You've show them where they're sitting, don't you?
Well, actually, the seating arrangement just changed, so
I know.
A little confused, but that's okay. They're finding their way.
That was Maureen Levy from Geneva, Illinois. That's cool.
It is. It's been a great experience. And like I said, I'm really proud that I represent this town. I've been telling all my friends about our traditions. They think I'm kind of silly with talking about the corn boil and the pep rally and all of that kind of thing. But I love to share about Geneva. They think it's interesting.
And how many more weeks do you have remaining on your team?
Well, when I go back, I have 6 weeks. So
and
I
you're
come back
in Geneva, and I'm sure that press
back
will be
gobbling
up the store.
Wow.
That's amazing. Isn't it? So who's the wackiest senator?
And we're really proud of you to represent Geneva because you are doing such a great job. Your life is so interesting. I know your dad said you learned time management, but they have to go back and work at night sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
somebody asked her, for God's sake.
So there's two shifts of the pages. And the early shift gets off at 6 o'clock, and the late shift is supposed to go till whenever we adjourn, but if that goes past 1 o'clock in the morning, then the early shift will come back on, and the late shift goes back home to sleep. And then also, it's kind of nice because if we go past 9 o'clock, we have no immediate homework due or tests the next day. And if we go past 10 o'clock, then we have no school the next day.
Wow.
So we haven't had that happen yet, but hopefully at some point.
The debt ceiling discussion. What is your position respect to the Libyan? How's Grandma doing?
She's doing good. She came out with my mom to visit in D.C., and
that's
she
cool.
got to watch John McCain gave a speech while she was there, so that was kind of cool, Senator John McCain. So she got to see him speak, and
that's awesome.
We did all the tourist things. I know you had a good time talking to her at my house.
A lovely lady. Lovely. Lovely. That's awesome. Anything else for Maureen?
Keep it up, kiddo.
Yeah, I didn't want you to sneak out because I know that, but we're very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Very cool. And I want to read your tell-all book.
Okay. All right. I'll get right on that for you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'll do the jokes here, Libby. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maureen.
Thank you, folks, for indulging us. Maureen obviously has other things to do, but she is an extraordinary young lady, and I think her story is just remarkable. Just cool as heck. Very cool. Without objection, we're going to move on. Instead of to item 11A, we're going to head to item 11D on the agenda. Item 11D is to consider a side letter of agreement with the International Association of Firefighters, Local 4287.
Second.
Motion by Vogelsberg. Seconded by Piper. Comments or questions for Ms. Dawkins regarding this side letter of agreement? Would the audience like a summary of what the side letter of agreement is? I'm sure you would. Ms. Dawkins, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mayor. Essentially, what the side letter says is that the Firefighters Union will defer part of their bargained for increase. This year they were due for a 3.75% increase. They will defer 1.75% of that increase until the last pay period of the fiscal year. So in other words, they will take 2% May 1st. They will then receive the other 1.75% on April 15th. There will be no retro pay. It just goes into effect for that last pay period. It's an approximate savings of $22,375, which, again, is about a 1.7% reduction. We were looking for about a 1.75% reduction to kind of equate it to what unrepresented employees were looking for this year.
Questions or comments? Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. I've read the packet. I've read the side letter of agreement. We've talked about it previously. My concern is giving up of a right that if state funding continues to be in peril, will prohibit us from considering laying off anybody in the fire department. Further, the side letter of agreement also identifies certain caveats that state that employees will receive a 3.75% wage increase in the event, for instance, numbers 2, 3, and 4 that are identified. So I think this is, it's not necessarily a bad idea. I don't know how the economics will work out if the state funding continues to be in peril, as Mrs. McKittrick keeps advising us. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
I will clarify that the guarantee of no layoffs is only for the fiscal year through April 30th, 2012. Again, it's only for the 1 year.
Right.
So that's no right given up long term.
Yep.
Anyone else from the dais? Alderman Maladra?
I get a little uncomfortable when we talk about extremes like if the state budget tanks and goes through the floor and we have economic disaster on our hands and things like that. But if such dark circumstances were to occur, there's a certain comfort I have knowing that the people that we're not laying off are the firemen who are here to protect us and things like that. So it seems to me to be kind of a good idea to keep those guys around regardless of the circumstances. Thanks.
Anyone else from the dais? Nobody objects? Alderman Pollack for a second time?
Thank you, Mayor. Just to follow up to Alderman Malaja's last comment, I'm looking at the city as a whole. I'm not specifically saying the fire department, but I'm looking at the fire department as one of the members of the family and simply identifying them as a special class, I certainly wouldn't do. Rather, I'm looking at the city. Thank you.
Anyone from the audience? Are we all clear on what the motion is? As explained by Ms. Dawkins, did you want to add something, City Administrator McKittrick?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just for clarification for the audience, the vote on the floor at this moment is to save the city money. There's a concession by a union that will save money, and that's what I just want to make sure that everybody understands. And with all due respect, I just wanted to check to make sure that Alderman Pollack understood that this is a cost savings to the city?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
I acknowledge that, yes.
Alderman Piper, and then Mr. Devine. Alderman Piper?
a cost savings that the union is not obligated to give us at all.
That's correct.
This is the end of the four. This is the end of a four-year contract. We're actually obligated to pay the 3.75.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Devine.
Yeah, John Devine, 921 Wood Avenue, Geneva, Illinois. I'd like to say to begin with, I think this is magnanimous on the firefighters' part to forego the 1.75. So I see the benefit there. But I would like to ask the question again because I didn't get it in my notes. What did you say the proposed savings was?
Approximately $22,375.
$22,375. Thank you very much. I would like to also ask what an average firefighter makes, just an average salary.
Salary schedule is in the notes, which are on the web.
I don't have that with me.
Sorry, does somebody have this?
I'm assuming, and if I'm incorrect, I apologize up front, that it's more than $22,375.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Sorry, I apologize for that.
I could read the limits if you wish.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much. My point was going to be that, as I said initially, I think this is very, very generous of the International Association of Firefighters Local 4287 to forego a 1.75 increase out of the 3.75. But I don't like the idea that we're giving away the fact that we may have to, and God forbid, I would not want to see anyone be laid off, but in these economic times, that may be necessary. I'm not going to address a particular alderman, but a comment was made, you know, we need the fire department. Yes, we do. I don't think there is anybody in the city that would want their, I'll just say, structure to catch on fire and not have adequate fire protection. I question the fact that if we have to lay off possibly more than one, how many that would be? Would that be two? Would that be three? And if so, is that going to diminish the staff, the fire department staff, to the point that we cannot protect the city? I think we need to have that discussion. So my point here is I would hope that you would consider possibly foregoing this unless Local 4287 would also grant the fact that we may have to lay someone off in the next 6 to 12 months. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Devine. Anyone else in the audience regarding item 11D, as in David, from the dais? Just to be clear, a affirmative vote on this, forgive me, if this motion and matter passes, what you are doing is authorizing me to sign this side letter of agreement and to effectuate the changes as prescribed therein. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll call.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Alderman Hill votes aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Aye.
Item 11D passes unanimously with 10 affirmative votes. We jump to item 11E, as in Edward. Consider side letter of agreement with the International Brotherhood of Electric Workers, Local 196. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Brown, seconded by Alderman Vogelsberg. Again, for clarification and edification, I turn to the Assistant City Administrator, Ms. Dawkins, to explain the nature of this side letter.
Thank you, Mayor Burns. This side letter of agreement, the IBEW, which are our electric workers, their contract guarantees them an increase of 3.5% for the upcoming fiscal year. We also went to them asking for a concession. We were looking for a reduction of 1.5%. They have agreed, much like they did this last fiscal year, to, in lieu of a wage concession, essentially they will do four mandatory furlough days. Those four mandatory furlough days do equate to 1.5%, an approximate savings of $16,680. And again, this is in return for the city guaranteeing no layoffs for that bargaining unit for this fiscal year only. So again, the fiscal year ending April 30th, 2012.
Any questions or comments for either Ms. Dawkins, Ms. McKittrick, Alderman Pawlak, then Alderman Vogelsberg?
Thanks, Mayor. I voiced the same concerns as I did the previous item, and that is the giving up of a right. And if state funding continues to be in peril, I really questioned us giving away a right. I recognize, as Mrs. McKittrick said earlier, that this is a savings. Thank you.
Mayor, if I may.
Yes, you may.
I would just also clarify, though, the state funding that you're referring to is general fund, and this would be the electric fund.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Thank you, Mayor. This comment is for both letter D and E. Hats off to you, Stephanie, for this, and thanking both unions for agreeing to it, because I think it's a big deal. They don't have to give it to us. It's a big cost savings, and I think it's good for all of us. So thank you for that, and thank you to them.
Alderman Flanagan?
I just want to say ditto. plain as simple, ditto.
Maureen Levy was here to hear that speech, because that would have been, she could take that back to D.C.
She could explain it
one
to
word.
You.
Exactly, she could. Anyone else on the dais or the audience?
I want to tell you, if there were less speeches, there would be much better. Once it only came to the point.
Mr. Devine?
John Devine, 921 Wood Avenue, Geneva, Illinois. And once again, I have to reiterate my position. You know, it's wonderful that they're being so generous to give us a cost saving, but they're getting something in exchange. The right that we're not going to, and God forbid, once again, we have to lay anyone off. But I don't see the cost benefit that we're getting here by giving up the fact that we can lay someone off. Thank you.
I think in the spirit of negotiation, it's about what you can negotiate as opposed to what you expect and want. So no comment to anybody in particular, but that's the nature of negotiations, certainly. And I would echo Alderman Vogelsberg's comments as well. Our deepest thanks to both unions for their cooperation, their support, their generosity, and their foresight. Alderman Maladra?
I think we have to keep in perspective, the unions are giving up a right as well. They have a right to a wage increase this year. That wage increase is contractual. It's signed off on. They're giving up that right. We're giving up a right. Everybody wins, everybody loses. Depends on your perspective, I guess.
The beauty of negotiation is everyone walks away not entirely happy with
exactly.
What they went away with.
So. Exactly.
Mr. Devine.
Thank you. That is a fact. I think I said that this was negotiated. They're giving up something that they don't have to. We're giving up something that we don't have to, and that's the fact that we're locked in for, I believe, the next 12 months that all these folks have a position. I would ask how many people in the city of Geneva have that same guarantee for the next 12 months. You know, it is a negotiation, and that's right. Ms. Dawkins did an excellent job. The unions did an excellent job. I'm sure they all negotiated in good faith, but it's both parties are getting something out of this. I don't see the city as a taxpayer getting the long end of this deal, if you will.
Well, Mr. Devine.
And that's my opinion.
No, it's a fair opinion as well, but I could
deep breath.
I could state almost unequivocally, I think the taxpayer, which we all are, of course.
That's right.
Received the assurances, and I'm speaking only to the IBEW now, since this is the item on the table.
That's correct.
That a lean force, and just for clarification, how many members of the IBEW do we have? Approximately?
13.
We can be assured that when there is a power outage, when there is a disaster, that we can respond in time. Because I see you smirking. What's the issue?
The issue is you're telling me or you're lecturing me.
No, I'm not lecturing. You know, I'm stating my opinion.
It sounds to me like you're lecturing me, but be that as it may,
but you
there's
play
13.
Such a good victim, Mr. Devine.
Well, no, I'm not going to be a victim. I'm sorry.
I know you're not.
No.
It's never enough for you, is it?
No, I will not be a victim to you. But when you want to admit. When you mention...
Oh, sir, with all due respect, okay, let me finish my statement and you can finish
please.
Yours. And then Mr. Ward can write about how I should resign, okay?
You, You started asking me why I was smirking. I was going to let you finish.
Okay. Join the council. Participate in the negotiations. You can deem what is appropriate and what is a fair trade-off. A fair trade-off is when I go to bed at night, I can assure the 24,000 citizens that live in Geneva that they will be taken care of by the 13 members of this union, pure and simple. I am not willing to sacrifice the service, nor the quality, nor the professionalism of that department, all for $16,000. I'm not willing to do that.
That's fine. That's your opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. You were mentioning there were 13 employees?
Correct.
I would ask the question, how many do we truly need? Do we need 13?
But isn't that always the mantra, Mr. Devine? In other words, clearly we've got a fattened staff and we should get rid of them. And
nobody said we had a fattened staff. You're the one that brought up that there are 13 members of the IBEW.
Right.
You know, now if times become tough, and I don't think anyone wants times to get any tougher than they already are, okay, I think we all would like to see prosperity return.
Sure.
You know, and seashells and balloons once again, but that may not be the case. You know, and I'm not here to be the pessimist. I'm simply saying if things were to get worse, do we want to negotiate away a fact that we may have to reduce a staff to 12, 11, whatever the bare minimum is? And I don't know what that number is. I never said I did. I'm saying, can we get by with 10? Can we get by with 11? Do we absolutely need 13? You're the one that brought up the number in the IBEW.
Well, just for clarification purposes, and I can state unequivocally, based on my relationship and my discussions with the superintendent of Electric Works, Mr. Buffington, the director of Public Works, Mr. Dinges, our relationship with the staff on a professional level, 13, as ironic as it sounds, approximately, is the magic number. Absolutely it is. We can measure it based on service calls. We can measure it based on our other factors. So,
well, then let's hope that we don't have to lay anyone off.
I can assure you we will not, because it will be contractually obligated that we won't have to.
Well, see, you're presupposing that that's going to be the vote, but knowing this council, that's you're probably right. Because I don't believe we've taken the vote yet.
No, we haven't. It's just a gut check.
Yeah. I know there's been a lot of gut check here tonight.
There's been a lot of biting of the tongue, too.
Hey, my gut tells me that 13 may be a little on the high side.
Mr. Devine, your gut tells you that anybody who works for a public municipality is somehow should be ashamed. I'm damn proud of the people that work for the city of Geneva. But
I've never said that.
Hey, guys, point of order, Kevin. Point of order, Mr.
Alderman Pollock's correct. Forgive me.
Thank you, Council, for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Devine, for your wisdom. Questions or comments from the audience? From the dais? Mr. Clerk, again, a passage of this allows the mayor to sign the side letter of agreement with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Don Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Alderman Hill votes aye.
Greg Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollock?
Aye.
Item 11E passes unanimously with 10 affirmative votes. Now that those matters are addressed and voted upon, we skip back to item 11A. But first, 11A, just for clarification, is to consider resolution number 2011-26, approving the fiscal year 2011-2012 city budget. But in the spirit of process, we would like to open a public hearing on this budget. I'll ask for a motion to do so.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Dantino, seconded by Singer, to open the public hearing. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? A public hearing is open on this matter out of deference to those who are joining us this evening. We invite anyone from the audience to comment on any matter of the fiscal year 2011-2012 budget. The floor is open. Seeing no interest, seeing no hands, hearing no comments, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Singer, seconded by Alderman Piper. All in favor of closing the public hearing on the 2011-2012 fiscal year City of Geneva budget, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Alderman Hill votes nay.
You voted nay to close the public hearing, Mr. Hill?
Yes, sir.
The motion passes with 9 affirmative votes and 1 nay vote. The hearing is closed. I will now entertain a motion to consider resolution number 2011-26, approving the fiscal year 2011-2012 City of Geneva budget.
So moved. Moved.
Alderman Singer makes the motion. Alderman Vogelsberg makes the second. This matter is on the floor for discussion. We will entertain questions or comments from the dais. Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor, at the time an issue came forward, I voted to rescind the $5,000 fee that was granted to the Cultural Arts Commission, and I would at this time like to ask the council to restore that $5,000 fee for the Cultural Arts Commission.
Are you doing that, Alderman, in the form of a motion to amend?
I don't know if I can do it. Can I do that in a matter of a motion?
Yeah, to amend the 2011-2012 budget to include the $5,000
appropriation. Is that the process? I will certainly do so as an amendment.
Second.
Motion by Singer to amend the budget as presented to include a $5,000 appropriation for the Cultural Arts Committee, seconded by Alderman Dantino. That amendment is on the floor for questions or comments from anyone in the audience as well. From the dais, Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. I seem to recall a couple weeks back we had a discussion regarding such item, and it was, I think, originally said there was $42,000 in the budget, and then
it was clarified.
How much was it then clarified? What was the clarification amount?
Approximately $24,000-$25,000, I believe it was. Yep.
So there's $24,000-$25,000 in their budget currently carried over.
In the fund balance.
Okay, great. $25,600.
$25,600.
Thank you.
Third time's the charm.
All righty. Thanks.
Sure. Alderman Marks.
You know, I was the one who made the motion to strike the $5,000, and I still, my thought process is this. I'm not against the Cultural Arts. I think it does a great job. But, you know, their fund balance is almost 50% of their budget for the year. And again, when the city's not sure where all of its funding is coming from, again, this council has shown in the past that when committees come before us, we look at the items and we do appropriate them as necessary. And I personally would rather see the $5,000 in the general fund balance, because when the snowstorm starts and we've got to call out the men to plow the snow, or the rain falls too hard and we've got to, you know, fill the streets, FEMA doesn't always reimburse us. They don't. They didn't with the last rainfall. We feel they're going to do some of it for the current snowfall that happened in February. But bottom line is that's the fund we look to. And, you know, I think the $5,000 belongs more there. And if they need it, they can come forward and ask. But let's face it, our general fund does not even have 20% of our expenses in reserves. And they've got close to 50 in theirs. I'm not sure why they need such a large reserve. And God bless them for they do. Maybe there is some reason that we don't know about at this point. But I just think that right now, $5,000 is not going to hinder them. That $5,000 is not going to make the count, you know, that association shut down. So I'm still going to stay with my vote of removing it from the budget.
Mr. Mayor, may I address Mr. Mark's request?
No, I'm going to recognize Alderman Brown first, and then I'll recognize Alderman Singer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will vote for this motion. I think the balance is somewhat deceiving, since they've just had their major fundraiser of the year. I went to the Geneva Film Festival this weekend. I think I saw the mayor there. It was wonderfully done. I think things like that are just wonderful additions to the city, and I think we can squeeze $5,000 out of the funds that we have to help the Cultural Arts Commission continue to do the good work they do. So I will vote in favor of it. Thank you.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Marks, the only guarantee revenue the city has the Cultural Arts Center has is a contribution of $5,000. If the weather could be a possible factor in inhibiting the success of any of the events that they have, And if that's the case, they'll have difficulty meeting their contractual obligations. So I think we have to give that assurance that, that at least there's going to be $5,000 in their budget to meet those contractual obligations. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, sir. Alderman Pollack, then Alderman Marks.
Thanks, Mayor. What are, I don't know who to address this to.
The contractual obligation statement?
Yeah, chance? Regarding, yeah. And what are their anticipated expenses?
Well, the cultural arts liaison is Ms. Dawkins. No. Oh, forgive me. Oh, Paul Evans right there. Sorry, Mr. Evans.
You look sexy, Heidi.
I made him so damn nervous he dropped all the contractual obligations. It's like,
hello, Council. Alderman hello. Pollack, do you have a question?
Yes.
Okay. what their balance is.
Oh, you didn't want me to repeat it?
Yes. Please, I'm sorry. What's the balance?
All right. No, my question is, what are the anticipated expenses?
You woke him up.
Yeah, sorry to wake you up. No. What are the anticipated expenses in the coming year for cultural arts?
Okay. I mean, there's a summary sheet that the council was given as part of the, it's in the budget as part of the cultural arts. Obviously, a number of them are, the expenses are such that paying for contractual expenses for things like the Orion Theater, for underground theater, for paying for contractual for rental equipment, paying for...
No, I know what, but how much?
Oh, it's $54,000.
So they have $54,000 in contractual expenses anticipated for the coming year?
No.
Approximately?
No, they don't have...
What would the anticipated approximate contractual expenses be? Anticipated.
Contractual expenses are around $15,000.
Okay.
That we'd have contractual.
And there's currently about $25,000 in their fund.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Alderman Marks, do you have a statement or a question?
Can I see that thing? I think they have contractual obligations. I do think they do a great job. But I also realize that the city does, you know, also give other things, services in kind, water for some of their events. I think we do support them again. They can always come back if they see that they're having problems. I just would restate that, you know, I would rather see the money in our fund balance at this point than in another fund balance, which has enough money right now to cover its contractual obligations. They've also paid all of their bills, it's my understanding, for most of their major events. There might be 3,000 outstanding, so again, they still have all their contractual obligations met for next year.
From the dais, Alderman Vogelsberg and Flanagan.
Thank you, Mayor. What I said the first meeting is I thought our agreement was to give them seed money, the $5,000 for the first year, so they could get up and running with their fundraising and different things like that. And I don't think this is a referendum between us on cultural arts. I think we all appreciate everything that they've done. But I find it hard to listen to all the budget meetings where we discuss if the water treatment plant needs a new neon light to do something that's actually for the public health, or do we really need a truck? Is it a need or a want? And all we hear about is a need or a want. And I'm sorry, I believe this to be a want. And I don't know how we could discuss the possible cost savings of whether we should make a side agreement with the union. And then the very next issue, hey, here's something that wasn't in the budget. Let's give $5,000 to cultural arts. It isn't about cultural arts. It is about our philosophy. Just a minute ago, we heard the government's shutting down and we have no money, except, what the hey, $5,000 for cultural arts. I don't think we can argue out of both sides of our face, and that is why I voted against it, not because I'm against cultural arts, but no other groups get any money from us, maybe SPAC, because they have no fundraising. And I don't understand how we could say that we're not going to give the staff this, we're not going to do this, we're not going to get our water treatment plant, we don't need a truck, we don't need anything, and we need this. I just don't think it's fair, and I just don't understand how one minute on one issue that is not cool or we don't have any friends on that group, it's a want and not a need. But then there's something that we all agree on. We like it, and our friends are part of it. And now all of a sudden we have the money. So thank you.
Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, am not against cultural arts. I enjoy all of your events, festivities. But with the economic temperament or the economic barometer of the city and how we have to cut costs and try to and we do so by furloughs and whatever way we can get our hands on and reroute money and whatever fund balances. So I too, cannot support the $5,000. Unfortunately, I would like to, but in all good conscience, I could not do it, not this year. So thank you.
From the dais, anyone else? Alderman Maladras, I'm sorry. You're just so darn forgettable.
So darn forgettable. Okay, let's face it. I hate the cultural arts.
No, you don't.
I'm just kidding.
No, you just hate Rain Man.
I just had to say something that you haven't already heard. But I think I want to put things in a little bit of perspective. We're talking about $5,000 for an operation that has a $25,000 balance and a somewhat independent means of income. Yes, $5,000 is your only guaranteed source, but it's not your only source. Things could work out well. Things could work out poorly. The fact is, we don't know. We talk a lot about if this bad thing happens or that bad thing happens. You know what? The way I look at it, you have a going concern that's in fair shape compared to some other funds that we're looking at. You've got some opportunities ahead of you. I wouldn't approach it by coming to us tonight saying, put this $5,000 in a budget. I would approach it by saying, let's see how we do. And when we get halfway through the year, if the Cultural Arts Commission is in trouble, we'll approach the council at that point in time. So I don't necessarily think that this is closing the door on anything in the future. It's just not guaranteeing you anything. But out of everything I've heard about the current economic situation, all I can say is nothing is guaranteed. So let's just wait and see. So I think I'll also vote against Alderman Singer's motion. I'm sorry I wasn't talking to the chair. But after my opening about hating the cultural arts, I got a little nervous.
All good. Anyone else on the dais? From the audience, Mrs. Hill. And then, of course.
Unfortunately, this is not the night to talk about cultural arts or what we have been. There's one point I do want to make that hasn't been brought up, and I think most people are aware of it, but I would like to stress that in our mission statement, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but part of our mission is to develop new and exciting cultural initiatives that encourage economic growth. When the commission was formed in May of 2006, we thought of events that were going to enhance the downtown, bring people to the downtown so they would spend money. So Shakespeare in the Park brings over 600 people. Hopefully they visit our restaurants and shop in our stores. A good example is this past weekend we had the Film Festival, which was, we considered, very successful. We know there were people and participants that attended from out of town. We had people here from Park City, Utah, participating. They had to sleep somewhere. They had to eat somewhere. This is exactly what we're about. You know, we're trying to bring events that will enhance the community, make this community desirable, along with our beautiful parks and our schools. So I just wanted to reiterate that part of our mission is to improve the economics of the community. So that's another thought. So it's like you're making an investment and you're getting that investment back, and our merchants are going to be benefiting from it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Hill. Distinguished gentleman on the left-hand side of the room.
Hi, I'm Vic Portencastle. So I have to say my address and everything, too? 2717 Blackman Road, Geneva, Illinois.
Well done. Well done.
I remembered it.
We're off to a good start.
Most of you know me because I'm a very shy person, and you know, I hardly talk to any of you. First of all, I would like to thank the council for their support for the Cultural Arts Commission. I have never, ever felt that there's never been support from the council. And I really appreciate what you guys have done to support us in the past, and I know that you're going to support us in the future. What I wanted to talk about was basically the same thing that Ms. Hill talked about, and that is that, you know, we're here to help the business climate of the community. All of us on the commission are very concerned about taxes and stuff in the community. We're trying to do our part to help to keep taxes down by bringing people to the city, making the city of Geneva a destination so that people will come and spend their money here, which in turn keeps our taxes down. We like to be advocates for tourism for the city of Geneva, and I don't know if any of you not ever talked to me, you know I'm one of the biggest Geneva fans in the world. Like Ms. Hill was talking about, the film festival this last weekend we had, I was at the film festival, and I was greeting people as they were leaving the film festival. They were all very appreciative of the fact that we were doing this. Most of them did not know Geneva existed before they came here. They had heard about it through the internet, through the film industry, and I shook almost everybody's hand that walked out the door, and I can tell you a large number of them asked me, is there a place to drink? Is there a place to eat? And we sent these people to establishments to eat and drink. I also have had many people ask me about, is there a place to stay in Geneva? And we've also sent people, see people there. I can agree with Mr. Maladra's idea that maybe tonight is not going to be the night we're going to get the $5,000. I can tell you that as far as the events go, we come very close to running out of money every year because of the money that we have to spend. We do have to. We ask a lot of our the people that come and do events here. We get a lot of people to volunteer their services to us. We ask a lot of the artists that come and do the entertaining to do it for free and stuff. But we do have to have some money to spend to bring the good people here and to increase the popularity of the events. The more money the higher quality artists and stuff do demand a little bit more pay because they are more talented. So what we're trying to do with this money is trying to up the level of our events and trying to, you know, make them expand the events a little bit more. Shakespeare in the Park, we get 600 people a year. We spend a good $2,500 on that. If it should rain on that day, we would lose $2,500, and we would not get it back because we have to pay the people for that. We do the snow sculpting every year. We really don't make any money on the snow sculpting, but we do attract a lot of people to Geneva because of it. We do the steeple walk every year. So all I'm saying is I wish that I could persuade some of you to reconsider tonight to support us with the $5,000. We really could use it. We're very frugal with our money. but, you know, however you guys decide is fine with me. I just wanted to voice my opinion. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience? This is to the amendment, which is on the floor, offered by Alderman Singer. Mr. Clerk, there being no additional questions or comments regarding the amendment offered by Alderman Singer, I kindly ask that you please take the roll call. And are we clear what what the amendment is? That is to reinstate an appropriation of $5,000 for the support of the Cultural Arts Committee in the 2011-2012 fiscal year City of Geneva budget.
Robert Piper?
Nay.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Nay.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph D'Antino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Nay.
Sam Hill?
Continue with the roll.
Greg Maladra?
Nay.
Richard Marks?
Nay.
Ray Pollack?
Nay.
Alderman Hill, the vote on the floor is to whether or not allocate $5,000 in the 2011-2012 City of Geneva fiscal year budget for the benefit of the Cultural Arts Committee. You are the last member of the council to vote.
Thank you. All the batteries on my portable phones ran out. But Alderman Hill votes aye in favor of the amendment.
Opposed, four in favor.
The final tally is 6 nay votes, 4 aye votes. The amendment fails. The main motion remains on the table, and that is to approve the 2011-2012 fiscal year budget for the City of Geneva as presented. Questions or comments on any item in the budget? Any issue relative to the budget?
Come on over there.
Oh, Alderman Brown, forgive me.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks, Ralph.
First thing I'd like to note is the budget, of course, will not survive first contact with the enemy like any war plan, and I have no doubt 6 months from now we'll be back moving an item around here and there. So I think all this discussion of what if is somewhat irrelevant. We should look at the numbers in front of us. Second comment is I've always liked to carefully watch the fund balances because I have this feeling that fund balances really aren't money that belongs to the city or the council. They're monies held in trust by us, monies that belong to the citizens of the City of Geneva, and we should always be asking is do we really need to keep these fund balances? Or should they be in the pockets of the people who provide them in the first place? And as I've watched them, I see one here that I can't explain to myself, and maybe Ms. McKittrick can help me on this. The Workman's Compensation Fund seems to have a very large and increasing fund balance each year. Is there a reason for that?
That's definitely right.
I'll address that if
okay.
I may.
Sure.
Our workers' comp, we are self-insured. We do have a reinsurance policy. However, for any one claim, we are responsible for the first $400,000 before reinsurance kicks in. And so, therefore, we kind of build that up for that. We do have a couple outstanding claims that we don't know when they're going to come to fruition, so we need to make sure we have money to cover that.
How large might those be, roughly speaking?
At this point, I don't know, but I would tell you one is very large.
I just look at the numbers and see we're building it up to almost $600,000 in this budget. And I'm just sort of sad that we couldn't have made that $595,000 and kept $5,000 for the cultural arts. Because, again, these are monies we're holding in trust for the people of this community. We're betting on the future here. It's a sort of an insurance, and clearly one could argue about the exact details of it. But here I think is a place where we could have found the $5,000 to support something which I thought would clearly have helped the community immediately. Thank you very much. I have no motion to make.
Thank you, Alderman Brown. Alderman Marks?
Mary, just a question of clarification. The two amendments, the two items that we voted on tonight for the
side letters.
For the side letters, are those in this budget, or is that going to have to be amendment now?
Those are reflected in.
I couldn't.
Why I skipped down to those first.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to make sure that those were already reflected.
Yes,
in
they are.
I just wasn't sure. Okay. Because I'd make the amendment now.
Anyone else on the dais regarding the budget as presented? Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor. In today's economy, it's important to have a balanced budget. This budget proposes to raise taxes, add additional staff, give raises, purchase a vehicle that's been identified as a want and not a need. The budget presented is not balanced. Chicago Tribune, as followed up by the Geneva Patch, identified that the police and fire pensions are not funded at the required 100%, but 50 and 67% respectively. Because these pensions are not properly funded, and the reasons identified above, I cannot vote in acceptance of this budget. Thank you.
Anyone else on the dais? Alderman Dantino.
I guess for the second year in a row, I would be voting against the budget. You pointed out last week that it was 9-1. That one was me. For a few reasons. In the budget, we have a position for a new hire in the finance department, and we have a hiring freeze. So at that point, I can't support the budget for that. Also, the truck that Alderman Pollack just mentioned, although not in this year's budget, was in last year's budget, was identified as a want by our superintendent, not a need. But the thing I have the hardest problem is when Mr. Mayor last week suggested there was some gamesmanship going on, and nobody felt more like there was gamesmanship going on than the night I made a backwards motion, I guess, to increase the water budget 0% instead of asking for the budget to for them to just approve it as amended, and then it would have fell 7-3 instead of being in favor 7-3 tonight. So that gave the opening for people to go back to work, have meetings with all the aldermen and so on the next few days, weeks. I even participated in some of those meetings to bring it back. I thought that was some gamesmanship that was played that week, and I was a little disappointed in that. My non-support of the budget is not a lack of trust that is always suggested here, that we have no trust in our staff or anything. It's just for the reasons of I stated above. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else on the dais? City Administrator McKittrick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to correct the statement made by Alderman Pollack. This is a balanced budget as defined by law. It is the third year in a row that we've come in with a reduction to the general fund. We have reduced the general fund by more than 30% over the last 3 years. We have added to our fund balance. We almost had our credit rating reduced because of the shape that our fund balance was in. This council passed a resolution adopting a finance policy regarding the fund balance in their wisdom, and I thank them very much for that, and prescribed that we needed a minimum of 90 days of operations in the general fund balance. We are up to 64 days as of the proposed budget. So with a reduction for the third year in a row of 10%, equaling more than 30% over the past 3 years, adding to our fund balance and bringing in a fund balance as it is defined by law, I would strongly urge the council to adopt this. This is a good, solid budget that meets the needs of the community set out in conformance with the policies that this council has prescribed. We have looked at the pension funds. The pension funds, they are a liability. This is not something that's happened in the past year or over the past 3 years. This is a situation that has been going on for decades and that we have been losing ground, not because we chose to do it, but because we couldn't keep up with the demands and the enhanced legislation that was going on at the same time. We're aware of it, and we are addressing those issues. As far as the finance position, we have been down a finance position for years, for several years. We're not adding a position. We've changed the position, but we're trying to fill five positions in finance, which we used to have. And we've been trying to do it for several years with four people instead of five. And as you recall, looking at the audit, we were critiqued and criticized in our audit because we weren't getting the work done. The reason we're not getting the work done is because we don't have enough people to do it. As far as the truck goes, I believe that we went through the budget, all of the budgets, approximately 30 budgets. Alderman Hill and Alderman Flanagan joined us at a couple of those budget meetings, and we held over three dozen of them. And I invited the council, anyone on the council, to join us to sit in on those meetings as well. And we went through every single line with a fine-tooth comb. And our department heads reduced and cut and eliminated as much as they could without affecting the service to our community. So I would ask the council to look at the big picture. Step back and look at this as a planning document, which it is. It's a policy planning document. It's a business plan. Not that it can't be changed, but it's a guideline for us to follow. And it meets the needs of the community in accordance with the policies and the priorities that you've set. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
From the dais, Alderman Marks.
You know, Mary, you and I have disagreed over and over on budgets, but I do have to say this. Do I like everything in this budget? I don't think anyone in this council sitting here right now can say they like absolutely everything. I'm going to vote for it because I think overall, as you look at the big picture and you sit at it, it is probably the best plan for the city at this point in time. You know, Mary, you and I have nitpicked. I've nitpicked at things, and you've come back and answered them. But overall, it is the right roadmap for this year for the budget. It is set on some of the guidelines that we did give. I think everybody up here can say right truthfully that they don't agree with every line item. I can say that. But overall, it is a roadmap, and it's a roadmap that I think we've bought into over the last year, and it's probably right now the right budget for the city. And I will vote in favor of it.
Thank you, Alderman Marks. Anyone else on the dais? Anyone in the audience? Mr. Lieben? Lovely sweater you're wearing tonight.
I wanted to stay awake tonight, so I thought I'd wear something bright.
All the viewers at home are now adjusting their dial.
Yeah. Scott Lieben, and I'm talking to you as just a citizen, and I just think that I've looked at the budget, I've talked to Mary about the budget, and I talked to Ellen about the budget, and I think they've done an absolutely terrific job in keeping the reduction. I know they're at a bare bones minimum to do the things and keep the services alive. I'm concerned when I hear about cutting trucks and fire engines when we have a regular rotation for them, because eventually we're going to have to pay the piper and get those things. And I encourage you to try and keep us up to date so we don't have to pay more on repairing equipment than on just buying a new piece of equipment. These are hard times, but times are getting better. The world isn't ending. And we're going to be in great shape in Geneva. Businesses are going to be doing better, too. And I just think they've done a great job in really looking at the budget, cutting back every year for 3 years in a row. And I think they can be proud of the job that the staff has done in doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Lieben. Anyone else in the audience regarding any matter contained within the 2011-2012 City of Geneva fiscal year budget? From the dais, Alderman Piper.
Yeah, I know we went 9-1 on this last year, and I know we went back and forth and debated quite a bit. Raises and all kinds of different things. I just want to be clear. We're at, what is it, Mary? Forgive me, $71 million. And this year, it's a truck that's not in this budget, an employee that we have to have, and gamesmanship due to lack of understanding of the process, quite frankly. Just so I'm clear, is that correct? That's what I'm hearing? That's all.
From the dais? From the audience? Mr. Clerk, kindly take the roll call, please.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Ron Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Nay.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Alderman Hill, Belt, aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Nay.
Item 11A, to consider resolution number 2011-26, approving the fiscal year 2011-2012 City of Geneva budget, passes with 8 affirmative votes, 2 nay votes. According to my record, ladies and gentlemen, we are down to item 13, new business. Is there any new business from anyone other than from the audience first, anyone at all? Mr. Pollack?
Thank you, Mayor. For clarification, when will that truck be declared surplus?
We did. Tomorrow morning about 8:05. I'll have to defer to, where is Mr.
There
Van Gescom? There he is. Mr. Van Gescom, the question on the floor is, when will the truck be declared as surplus?
It was declared surplus the night of the vote when it was brought up for
the purchase of the vehicle.
When will it be put on iBid?
We're still in talks with Gary Paris, the fleet manager, on if it's going to iBid or what we're going to do with it. But, you know, we'll be in talks with Mary and you know, Dan Digis as far as what we eventually will do with that vehicle as far as where we're going to put it up.
Yeah, but the public will be notified as to where it will be sold or put out for auction?
The public will be notified to the extent that Mr. Van Gescom and Director Dingus advises City Administrator McKittrick and this council as to exactly what was done with that vehicle. Exactly, yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, there's, I mean, we are Casper the Friendly Ghost in terms of transparency. So.
Don't be friendly too transparent. Ghost. I got a 16-year-old boy who would like a nice sweet
That's right. You can't buy it. You're prohibited. Anyone else from the dais? Any new business at all from any member of the audience? If not, I will entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Everybody on this side said yes. We'll give it to Alderman Dantino, seconded by Alderman Marks. All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye
from hell.
Yeah, the guy who's at home first to vote.
That impression didn't